Buff. The oxygen machine exhales. It goes all through the day, all through the night. My wife exhales, like a sigh of resignation. It's 6 in the evening, and she hasn't opened her eyes today, or spoken a word. This day, between her birthday and our wedding anniversary, is the day she dies. Yesterday, the boys and I dabbed green tea on her lips, and she smiled. But not today. Another long sigh. Her final breath? Not yet. There's another. And another. And then, no more. The last is like the wash of a wave fading into sand. The oxygen machine is still breathing. I remove the wedding ring from my wife's dead finger and box it in my fist. The machine exhales. I exhale. It scarcely missed a breath, this ring. I turn off the oxygen machine. Kate lies bathed in evening sunlight, the flesh of her arms already beginning to bruise with draining blood. It was the autumnal equinox, September the 23rd. The sun had crossed the celestial equator, and our last summer was behind us. Perfect timing. She couldn't face another winter, she'd said. There was a full moon that night. I stood in the backyard. I took a slug of whiskey and I thought, what next? We had discussed what next a good deal that summer, knowing her death was imminent. You'll be fine, she'd say. I'm not worried about you. I had a lot going for me. It would be a release. And it won't be long now. Oh, that's all right then. But I'll tell you something. You don't know how precious life is. You think you do, but you don't. I couldn't argue with her. She was dying. What did I know? I look back on it now as a good summer, despite everything. Painful, penetratingly sad, but without despair, and shot through with extraordinary moments of joy. It vindicated our decision. Precisely 100 days before she died, we were sitting in another sunlit room at the hospital. A doctor was telling us that the cancer had spread beyond all hope of containment. How long? Kate asked, and ventured her own estimate. 6 months? But there was a pause before the doctor answered. Perhaps. The best he could offer, the last resort, was another course of chemotherapy, which, if it worked, would extend her life by a couple of months at best. It would be the kind of chemotherapy that made your hair and fingernails fall out and made you sick to your bones. We knew all about chemotherapy. And the chances of it working? 1 in 5. We didn't have to decide right there and then, the doctor said. The following week would do. But the disease was moving fast, and treatment, if that was the choice, could not be delayed much longer. We agreed on the drive home that it was not a decision to take on impulse. We would discuss it with Tom and Nat, our sons. We would weigh the pros and cons and do our best to make sense of the uncertainties. And in the days that followed, we did those things. There was no agenda. Discussion came piecemeal over lunch on the patio, or watching the sunset up on the seafront, or in the quiet of the early hours, and we assembled the fragments forensically. It's your decision, the boys said. We'll support you in whatever you do. My first thoughts back there in the consulting room had lined up pretty smartly against the idea of further treatment. Even as the doctor spoke, I was doing the existential equations. I factored in the probabilities alongside the pain and indignities, and I could see no good reason to intensify and prolong the suffering, which was already considerable. The end was inevitable and close now, treatment or not. Better to take what we could from the last days, not lose them to the ordeal of chemotherapy. If the treatment didn't work, which was likely, then it would just be adding insult to injury. I kept those thoughts to myself at the time. If Kate was forming a different view, and I got the impression she was, then it was not for me to interfere. It was her life. and before long I began to see other sides to the argument. She had responded well to aggressive forms of chemotherapy in the past. Why not now? And why was the doctor being so conservative, so pessimistic about the outcome? Oncology is not an exact science. They get these things badly wrong sometimes. I was given 6 months to live, you hear people saying, and here I am, 5 years on, fighting fit. So, I made the case for treatment. I said perhaps it was worth a shot. I don't want to die with no hair, she said. Rational deliberation had little to do with it in the end. It came down to a feeling of rightness. There are practical matters to deal with in the minutes and hours following a death. I called a doctor to conduct the certification, and a soft-spoken Ghanaian man showed up. I asked him if he could recommend an undertaker because, bizarrely in retrospect, I hadn't given the matter any thought. The doctor went on his way, and I called the cooperative funeral service. And while we were waiting for the undertaker, the boys and I took turns to say goodbye. I stroked her hair. When the body was removed, we, Tom, Nat and I, and Nat's wife, Rosie, ate some pasta and drank some wine. We talked about Kate. Her death felt unexpectedly like an accomplishment. It was a peaceful end, we agreed, a dignified one, and the suffering was over. I could not face spending the night in our, now just my, bedroom. So I laid a mattress on the floor in Tom's. I read Seneca's Letters from a Stoic for a while before settling to sleep, and I slept well. The next day, our anniversary, I took Kate's wedding ring to a jeweler for resizing. I'd promised her I would wear it for the rest of my life.